Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 85 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
What's up, guys?
And it is Tuesday, August 25th, 2015, and we are talking about new comics, going to preview some new comics that are coming out tomorrow, Wednesday, August 26th, 2015. And yes, even though I just said it was August 25th as we were recording this, I checked my phone to make sure that tomorrow was the 26th. Apparently, I don't understand how calendars work unless I'm staring right at one.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah. And Dave, how you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Last week did a friend's podcast from work. So he does like a lot of audio editing and stuff and make sure like levels are good. So I don't think it'll be out for like, you know, a couple weeks yet, but when it is, he was like, we talked a little comics. We talked a little bit about Philadelphia. The podcast is called What's Good in Philly.
So it's a local like Philadelphia podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. He just cool. started and I was his like first, not like, he did the first one with his girlfriend, and then I was like the first person that wasn't like somebody that he sees like every day, you know. So he's but still familiar with. So he's like kind of getting like, you know, his what feet
guys,
wet.
What did you guys talk about? Like Philadelphia comic book stores?
We just talked about Philly, basically, and then just life. You know, it was, you know, Philadelphia was the start of the conversation, and gotcha. That sparked a lot of different conversations.
The springboard, if you will.
Right. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this podcast and comic book stores and comic books. And he was like, "Is there any good, really good Philly comic that I should be reading?" And I brought up, why can't I think of the name? Strange Fruit. By Mark Waid and J.G. Jones. Because as we were talking here, that, you know, J.G. Jones is a Philadelphia artist, and yes. Models all work at Atomic City Comics in Philadelphia. Yeah. So like it's totally like a Philly comic. It's not set in Philly, but like the creators, the models, it's a Philly comic.
Right. You know?
And I was like, go buy it from Atomic City and go get look it at the models.
Get it signed by the cover models.
Yeah, exactly. So, it was a pretty cool time. He said he'd throw us some audio, to preview if we wanted. And,
yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah. He actually had asked the question if we interview people, about like their favorite comics or friends we know, and I was like, no, and I was like, that could be like an interesting like side podcast to this, like, you know, just you know, talking to people about their comic history,
yeah,
their secret origins, or even, you know, finding people who don't read comics, asking them what their favorite movie, TV, books are, and, you know, reviewing a comic with them. Anyway, that just, it had sparked an idea, but, yeah, so that's what I've been up to.
Nice. That sounds awesome. I saw today, this wasn't in our show notes, but I saw today that there was a Flash casting, unless this is old news and I just didn't realize it, but, Comic Book Resources was, talking about, hold on a second, I'm going to pull this up right now.
Is it Jesse Quick?
Yeah, Jesse Quick.
Yeah, that just broke today.
Okay, yeah, Violet Bean, and she's pretty.
Yeah, she's pretty young looking, and I think...
Pretty young looking.
I think she's probably going to be the same age as Wally, which makes sense, you know, and who's going to be on the show, but... Man, I'm so excited for this year of CW, Flash, and Arrow. It seems like they're just like, hey, we love Geoff Johns' JSA run.
Right.
Hawkman is going to be on Arrow, and the Flash, he is now going to be a full cast member of DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And we're getting Atom Smasher, Jay Garrick, Mr. Terrific, and now Jesse Quick. I mean, this is...
This is like late 90s, early 2000s JSA right here.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a great time to be a JSA fan if you're watching TV, particularly the CW. It's not a great time if you're a JSA fan in comic books, because they are not really existent in what, you know, people have known them as. But yeah, so that's really cool and exciting news. And oh, I did read an interview with one of the showrunners of Legends of DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Right.
I hate that title. And they were saying that they're drawing heavily from John's JSA run for their Hawkman Hawkgirl relationship.
Oh wow, that's awesome. Yeah. And to me, that is like the ideal Hawkman. You know, unless you like truly classic, like Silver Age Hawkman, Hawkgirl, going up to like into like the Super Friends cartoon. But
unless you're doing Alien Police, the Egyptian reincarnated version is really cool.
Yeah. And I love the way I think John's just made Hawkgirl into such a like fun and unique character for the first time in her history when he was writing Kendra Saunders.
Yeah, you know, I always felt like, you know, Hawkgirl was just like same as Hawkman.
Right.
And, you know, I think in the Silver Age JSA or JSA, JLA, you have a lot of those personalities were interchangeable. So I don't think it was necessarily that they couldn't write women. I just felt like there wasn't much of a personality to anybody.
That's a good point.
But, you know, he pretty much streamlined Hawkman and the Hawkgirl mythos, you know, incorporating Thanagar into... ancient, their ancient Egyptian golden age origins. And I think that was really cool. And I think taking them to TV or the movies and going with the Egyptian route rather than doing the Thanagar route works so much better. And just because, you know, as you look at, DC Comics and you go, oh, well, wow, what a crazy coincidence that a Kryptonian looks exactly like an Earthling, you know?
Right.
And then, oh, also a crazy coincidence that a Thanagar, someone from Thanagar looks exactly like an Earthling. But now you have a way to kind of, you know, do like ancient alien type stuff with them, you know? And I think that's something that, you know, is pretty like noteworthy of today, you know, like that History Channel show and stuff like that. So I think it's a really, really cool.
Speaking about like how all the aliens, you know, look like Earthlings, that reminds me of the Superman, not Miracle Monday, but the other Superman book that Elliot Magan wrote. And in those first few pages, I remember him talking about how, like, the space explorers who founded Krypton, you know, who discovered Krypton and then built that civilization there, he kind of hinted, like, they were all from this same race. And he didn't say where the first people came from, but that Krypton and, like, Earth were all offshoots of the same, like, alien race of, like, star wanderers.
Well, you know what, that would... You know, that's a good solution somewhat to that, you know.
It's funny, too, because, like, that book was published in the late 70s, back when religion in the United States was just much stronger. And, like, I know so many people who just don't go to church anymore. And I feel like that wasn't the case 30 years ago. And even in the books, like in that novel, there's like heavy references to God, you know, and like believing in God, even though it's like grounded in science fiction. It's interesting. It's like they make references to, you know, in God being a higher power more than you expect in like a Superman book.
Right. I remember growing up that my friend's mom was just, I think she was kind of upset or shocked that my mom let me go see Star Trek, The Final Frontier, which was, I think, the fifth Star Trek movie, if I'm counting things right.
Was it the one with the dolphins? That's four.
Yeah.
Final Frontier. Oh, yeah. Final Frontier is that terrible one where kind of like Spock's brother becomes God or something, right?
Well, they meet God, yeah, at the end.
Right.
And that was basically the Final Frontier was like getting to the edge of the universe and meeting God, I think.
Right.
I mean, I'm recalling this from my middle school brain, you know?
Yeah, like 25 years ago.
Yeah. Or if it was even middle school, you know? But yeah, you know, like even in the early 90s, that was like a thing where you're like, oh, wow, this is a little racy, Star yeah. Trek, saying like you can meet God and he's an alien. Or I don't really remember what it all was, but like, you know, I don't even know what I made of the movie, but I remember
those goddamn Genesis thumbs.
But speaking of the CW, on the CW Seed today, Tuesday, is the first episode of Vixen, which
it's up
right now. It ties into The Flash, Green Arrow, and also Legends of DC's Tomorrow.
I'm gonna watch that.
Yeah, so I took a peek at the CW Seed at work, just at my lunch break, just check in, see what it was like. It looks cool. And Vixen's first episode is 5 minutes. So
yeah, okay.
You have time to watch it. I have time to watch it. We could find time to watch it. So
it's called like when you're brushing your teeth.
Right, exactly. So, but the site looks cool. The animation looks cool. I'm excited to watch it. I'm probably gonna watch it sometime this week.
Yeah. And are we getting like a new episode a week? Is that how it's watched? It?
I think so. I thought it was gonna be a dump like Netflix does, but it looks like it's gonna be, you know, doled out like week to week, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I would just sit here for the next hour after we finish recording and watch all 12 episodes. Because yeah. Like at 5 minutes an episode, like, yeah, oh, I'm gonna binge watch this show.
I'm gonna binge watch a half hour.
Yeah, an hour later I'm like, yeah. Or season two.
Yeah, exactly. So in other TV news, ABC is ordering a Mockingbird pilot.
Yeah, and it's like the will they, won't they, Ross and Rachel relationship between like this Mockingbird series and ABC Corporate. It's like they say they're going to do it, then they say they're not going to. But I'm excited for it. Because the only downside is it takes Adrian Palicki away from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, yeah, and I think that's why they didn't want to do it, was that she's a strong character on there.
She was such a breath of fresh air when she came to that show.
Right. So, you know, hopefully if she moves away, they bring in another character similar to Mockingbird that they can, you know, be the highlight of that show. And I think, you know, Marvel has enough spy/street-level, somewhat grounded characters that they could, you know, fill that Mockingbird role in a different way.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, when are we going to get Countess Valentina Allegra de Fontaine?
Yes.
Crickets. Yeah, it's funny. She used to be the most famous female member of S.H.I.E.L.D. You probably, like, if the name doesn't immediately ring a bell, she was the skunk-striped, tall, like, leggy brunette that, you know, used to hang out with Nick Fury. And had usually her hair in like a big bun.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And like one of the most fun names in comics ever. Countess Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. And it's one of those things where, like, you either immediately memorize her name or she just becomes that countess lady, you know, who's always with Nick Fury.
Right, right.
Yeah, but she was, like, the female agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, not counting Sharon Carter, I feel like, for, like, the longest time.
Right, yeah. That's true. Yeah. And the only other bit of news that I dug up this week was that I now know why I have always thought that Elektra and Psylocke were related.
Yeah, you sent me a link to that, and it goes to one of Brian Kernan's Comic Book Legends Revealed, which has been easily one of my favorite comic book related, you know, articles, like regular features, forever. Like, this is something I read constantly because he's just a good writer and, like, very well researched. And that's all on comicbookresources.com.
Yeah. And I'd say it's like legends is like in quotes.
It used to be like urban legends. So it was like debunking like popular fan theories that turned out not to be true, or in some cases were true.
Right. Or, yeah. So it started out like that, but, you know, that can only go so far. And, you know, now it's just like interesting facts, I would say, about comics, or interesting stories, interesting tidbits, like why people think that Psylocke and Elektra are related.
Yeah, I didn't think anybody thought Psylocke and Elektra were related.
Well,
other than they do have similar outfits, and that comes from... after Psylocke going through the Siege Perilous, she was kind of like taken over by the Hand, and the Hand were the same ninjas who, you know, resurrected Elektra.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, which is why she had like kind of like almost like a purple version of Elektra's costume.
Right, yeah. And this toy, they just pretty much used the same toy.
Yeah, and I remember when this issue, when these toys came out, because I had that Psylocke figure, because I thought it was awesome that she came with Psylocke's psychic, you know, knife, her dagger, which...
Yeah,
if this were a Chris Claremont comic, I would spend two captions explaining what it was and how it fries men's brains. and then the next issue, I would do the exact same thing. Yeah, that is weird. I do remember when Marvel released the Elektra figure came later. The Psylocke figure came first, and then the Elektra figure came later. And it really, I guess, did drive home the point that, wow, these characters have the same costume.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I knew who Psylocke was, but I wasn't very aware of Elektra until much later. And so, like, I was like, oh, that must be her, like, twin sister who she doesn't talk to too much.
That's funny because the character that Psylocke is related to, in a way, well, obviously Captain Britain, her actual brother. But then so it was weird because Psylocke used to be a purple-haired British, white British woman. She went through the Siege Perilous and was, you know, reborn into the bathing suit-clad Asian woman that we all know and love today. And I was like, wait a second, this lady used to be white and now she's Asian. It was explained years later that she had switched bodies with a Hand, you know, a Hand devotee named Revanche, who they then brought back in Elizabeth Braddock's old body to make things. So it wasn't like her body was transformed from white to Asian, though still keeping purple hair. She somehow switched bodies with another purple haired lady. Yeah, that's why that, like, post-Claremont, pre-Morrison era of the X-Men, just, like, skip over it. Dave, you there? Dave?
Hello?
Hey.
Hi.
Oh, man, you missed my entire, like, Psylocke explanation.
Yeah, I totally, my thing totally crapped out. Now it looks like there's three of me in here.
Yeah, it does. I'm getting outnumbered by Dave's. you're like Max Headroom. Yeah, basically I was explaining, because I'm not going to edit this out, but if you want to hear the long version, Dave, you're going to have to listen to the podcast.
All right, I will. I'll go back and listen.
Yeah, but I basically explained who Revanche was and how Psylocke went from white purple-haired lady to Asian purple-haired lady. And it wasn't that her body transformed, but she somehow switched bodies with an Asian purple-haired lady. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be like you like switching bodies with somebody and requiring that they also had like rectangular plastic glasses. Which actually is more common than purple hair.
Yeah.
Especially in the 1990s. Like now I see girls with purple hair all the time. In the 1990s, it never did.
Yeah. Like, oh no. Like, I feel like it would be like, oh no, I ended up in a Scott Pilgrim comic.
And I love Jim Lee's redesign of Psylocke, you know, into the Asian swimsuit model. But Elizabeth Braddock's like old outfit, I was always a huge fan of it. Like she was a telepath, so she actually wore armor because she wasn't a fighter. And I liked that she had this like butterfly effect for her telepathy, which they kind of got away from when she became like this telepathic ninja who, instead of like just stunning people like mental blast, had like a psychic dagger and a psychic like katana blade.
Right.
Yeah.
So Billy.
Yeah.
What's in your 20?
All I can say is so much Marvel. You know, it's another Secret Wars week. Sadly, we got some news that the next issue, Secret Wars, which was due out soon, I think it was due out this week, is not going to be out until like the second or third week of September.
Okay.
But we are getting Deadpool Secret Wars number 4.
Oh man, your favorite Secret Wars secret book.
Tie-in that's not actually a tie-in. And it has an Tony Harris has been doing the regular covers for this, and this one might be the most awesome one yet, just because it shows off Deadpool's like bitchin' mustache. he's been healed, like he no longer looks like like hamburger meat, but he's got this like 1980s mustache and like feathered hair going on too, and like burly 1980s Tom Selleck like chest hair too.
That's funny.
Yeah, so that's number 4. I don't know if this is the final issue. I hope it's not, because I'm really like enjoying it. Oh no, it is. It says this is how the original Secret Wars really ended. So this is the final issue. If people have not been reading this, like get on it. It's so good. That's $4. Next up, Civil War number 3 by Charles Soule and Lionel Francis Yu. Another $4 comic. This has been great. This book. You know, is so much better than the last issue of the original Civil War. And it's very Spider-Man focused, and we all know that I love Spider-Man. My third Secret Wars tie-in is Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra. Like, most of my favorite Secret Wars tie-ins, it seems, are the ones that you just aren't as Secret Wars-ish, you know, as everything else.
Correct.
And this is basically like a Hydra wage slave. Like, this is a guy who's just like clocking in and clocking out of his Hydra job.
He's kind of like our idea for Terrence.
Yes. Yeah. And the funny thing is that this is an idea like Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra. I remember somebody pitching this, and I don't know if it's the same writer, David Mandel, but I remember 10 years ago, somebody writing an article for like Comic Book Resources about pitching an idea to Marvel for basically like an Agent of Hydra series that was like this, like humorous in tone. And so I'm excited for this. And we've seen stuff like this before, like Bob, Agent of Hydra, one of Deadpool's side characters. But yeah,
right.
This looks cool. David Mandel is a new writer to me. Michael Walsh, new artist to me. So that's $12 that I'm going into there. What else to get? I'm going to jump up to DC because I saw that there was a new issue of Justice League 3000.
Sorry,
3001 number 3, which is, it's funny. I was in a comic book store this past weekend, which is something I don't really do that often anymore because I, buy everything digitally. And I was like, I feel like number 3 should be out by now. And that's because it comes out this week. So that brings me up to 15. And that really leaves me enough room to buy one more comic. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I could jump in on We Are Robin number three, but I'm going to give something new a try. And that is Drive number one, James Salas's Drive number one. And I believe it is based on the movie Drive.
Oh.
But I'm not positive because it takes place in Los Angeles. And it's about, it says in LA, there's a one man you want to be behind the wheel. Just tell him where and when. You know what? I take it back. It actually doesn't look like the movie, but it looks really cool. So that's my final book is Drive Number One, IDW by Michael Benedetto and Anthony Fuso. That's a $4 book that brings me to 19 and I'm out.
Cool. Yeah. I am grabbing.
I said I'm out, like I'm walking away from this podcast.
Boom.
Mic drop. Have fun, Dave.
I'm grabbing Aquaman number 43 by Cullen Bunn and Trevor McCarthy. This is detailing Aquaman's story post-convergence, which is very different. He's had a break from Mera, and we're gonna get into it.
And like Mera wants to kill him, right?
Yeah. She's pretty angry. She's pretty angry about it.
She's kind of hot-headed. Like,
yeah. Like all those gingers are.
Ever since, yeah, Nick Doyle, like angriest man I know.
Yeah.
Ever since, I guess, like Blackest Night, or like, you know, once Geoff Johns started writing Mera, she just became like an angry character. Like she's like the nerd rage of DC Comics. So I guess Superboy. Yeah. She's just the rage of DC Comics. She's like a WWE diva of DC Comics.
Cyborg number two is my next one.
Nice. I still have to read number one of that.
Yeah. Gorgeous art, obviously, by Ivan Reis and Joe Prado. And it's written by David Walker. And we're going to see how much of a human Cyborg really is.
Yeah. Physically, it seems like 5%.
Yeah. And, you know, mentally, I think that's kind of where it is. Like, how much is he a machine? And, you know, what is he? Like you, I'm also picking up Justice League 3001, number three. And then I'm going to grab Justice League of America, number three, with art and writing by Brian Hitch. I really enjoyed the first issue, and I'm looking forward to reading this full series. Takes place outside of continuity. Everybody's kind of like standard New 52 costumes and look and personality. So, like, you know, but this could really take place anywhere at any time. And so it's just a good solid book.
It's funny that they talk about, like they really brag about this book being, you know, taking place outside of regular continuity. But then you look at Geoff Johns' regular Justice League comic, and Superman is wearing his traditional uniform. Like, he's not in his t-shirt and jeans look. And Batman is not Jim Gordon.
Right. And they said that Newsarama just had an interview with Geoff Johns, and he said that it's all going to fit into continuity.
Gotcha.
But the matter of when will ruin some things as far as continuity goes. And he said, you know, loosely, you know, so just like, you know, I mean, I think everybody looks at Superman and Batman being like, why does this not line up? You know, he said, but, you know, this isn't really lining up with Cyborg either. And nobody's like, hey, this isn't lining up with Cyborg. You know, no one's saying that. So his point is that, like, just give it time. You know, there'll be a reveal where this takes place and it'll loosely fit in. And, you know, if you want to nitpick the details, nitpick the details. But, you know,
I do want to nitpick the details.
and I think he's saying, like, the big details, you'll know. But, like, if you're like, well, you know, he said this to Wonder Woman in Superman, Wonder Woman, this issue. And then he said this in Justice League. And if it's in, like, I don't think they're getting that nitpicky, but it's going to be like, well, Superman loses his powers here, Batman dies here, this fits in here.
Mm.
That kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But speaking of which, did you read Justice League number 43?
I did. I was hoping we could segue into that. And I love that issue.
Yeah, it was great. I'm excited about seeing the buddy cop of Batman Green Lantern, or God Batman Green Lantern, out in space looking for more information.
Those two don't get along when Batman's not a god.
Right, yeah. And I'm looking forward to more of the Superman Lex Luthor buddy cop movie now that has switched roles, where Superman looks like the bad guy now.
Yeah, he looks like Mr. Negative from Dan Slott's Spider-Man run.
Right, or when Supergirl was like kind of possessed by Darkseid and took that black costume.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm excited. He's got his powers from because I guess Lex Luthor was saying that basically that Apocalypse is a sun, and like I guess this sun is fueled off of, you know, like anti-matter or anti-life or something, you know, like it's not a regular sun, and that's what Superman bathed himself in. And man, does he look like not a guy you want to hang out with.
Yeah, so true.
And I'd say finally, which is really cool about this book, and which I would say from the beginning, is that Wonder Woman always seems like she is center stage of the Justice League. Outside of, you know, stuff like, you know, the Atlantis War, where like, you know, Aquaman kind of takes center stage, but for the most of the run of Geoff Johns Justice League, I think Wonder Woman is the main character.
Oh yeah, she's definitely been narrating this entire story.
Yeah, and if you look at just like the characters that Geoff plays with in the as far as supporting characters, they're mostly Wonder Woman characters. Steve Trevor, like, he doesn't really show up in like Wonder Woman comics. Well, at least not the ones that Brian Azzarello is writing. I haven't been reading the Finch's run.
Right.
But it seems like that's more set in like on Themyscira and you know, other her, like, you know, villains like Cheetah, Dr. Psycho, they're like all like have appeared and play somewhat big roles in some storylines in this Justice League run.
Yeah.
And I think she is really a great voice and a great way in to both Grail, Mr. Miracle, and Darkseid, and putting all these gods into perspective, because she's kind of technically an old god, as where, you know, we are looking at the new gods, and as the anti-monitor comes to face Darkseid, we are looking at a new world of anti-gods.
Right. And that, it's funny, I didn't realize, like, I knew Darkseid was bigger than the standard, like, DC character, but that panel where Darkseid is marching on the anti-monitor with Kalibak at his side and all his parademons, and all the parademons are, like, standard DC character size, but Darkseid and Kalibak are huge. And I didn't realize Kalibak was that big, because he didn't look big next to Steppenwolf. But then next to Darkseid, he looked more Darkseid size than anybody else's.
Yeah, I wonder if because they're gods that the size doesn't matter.
Maybe. And it's funny, I always hope that we'll get some kind of backstory on the Shadow Demons. And there's just such cool characters.
You mean parademons?
No, the ones that like...
Anti-monitor.
Yeah.
Right.
But we never seem to get anything, you know, leading to them.
Well, we could still hope there's a lot more of this Darkseid War.
Yeah, because they end up just being like just background minions, and like they're almost like regular level video game villains. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like they just blend in with everything else. And I guess to an effect, the same with the parademons. But I feel like we know more about the parademons than we know about the shadow demons after all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, yeah, I'm still loving the Darkseid War. It has me like excited to read Justice League every month.
Me too.
And and what else came out this week?
I read Dr. Fate number 3.
Oh, how was that?
That was really good. We're seeing him take more control of the helmet, and we're learning a little bit more backstory of his father and how the gods work on these Egyptian gods work in this story.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's it. I read the like the not the zero issue, but that free preview.
Yeah.
And then the first issue, but I just haven't gotten around to like I really just got to sit down and read the next two issues.
Yeah, you'll enjoy them.
Yeah.
Did you read Age of Ultron and Marvel Zombies number 3?
I did, and I thought this book was like it picked up well because the previous issue I thought was a little on the boring side, but this one I thought James really found his focus again, and it was a lot more exciting.
I feel like the issue 2, I enjoyed a lot, but it was a lot of like, okay, this is how this world works.
Right.
Without that, this issue would not be as great.
That's a good point. Yeah, it was just like the second issue was just a little too on the expository side for me.
Right.
And yeah, I'm sure it helped make this third issue stronger. But that said, I'm definitely like this issue better than the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny though, like the combined like Ultron zombie characters don't appear as scary as I thought they would. They just look like zombie robots. Like, you know, like they did, like it seemed like Ultron was going to make this like new kind of life. And all it looked like, cause he puts them in the zombie into this chamber and the Ultron to another chamber, kind of like the Fly movie. And yeah. I expected like just something a little more than just like zombies grafted with robot parts. They looked like outtake villains from Future's End.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else did you read?
Well, I read Phonogram. I said, you know, I said I would read volume 1 and I finally did read it. Did you read it?
I did.
And what did you think of it? Because I have a guess that you might have liked it more than I did.
I thought it was okay. I didn't love it. I thought it was okay. I felt like if you were not like a fan of 90s Britpop, you were kind of lost.
Yeah, like I recognize like Blur and Oasis, but a lot of the band names, like I was like, are these real bands or is Kieran Gillen just like making up a couple of names?
Some seem like he might be making up, or some might be like so like indie Britpop that like you think he's making up, but
right. Not.
But I was going through and looking them up on Ardio and starting to make a playlist. And at some point I was like, I just have to read this. And I stopped. He does have an index in the back of that first trade.
It's like a glossary of like, you know, all the terms and bands that he references.
Right. And I mean, he references a lot, even I think more than that. They are, but you know, like the story seemed okay. Like it seemed like a Grant Morrison-esque story.
Yeah, I was getting like a Neil Gaiman vibe from it. Which,
right, you know, right, that too. I got both of those. I feel like the magic side reminded me of Neil Gaiman.
Right.
Like just how he was writing magic. But his lack of description of how things work reminds me of Grant Morrison.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I feel like with the lack of description of how things work, and if you lack knowledge of Britpop, you kind of lose out a lot on this story. And I think if you are a big fan of Britpop, you would,
right,
especially in the, you know, Britpop in the 90s, I think you will, you know, dig this. And, you know, I like the beginning chapters and then the end chapters, and the middle was a little bit, you know, I feel like it could have been tightened up a little bit.
I had a hard time remembering who was who. And I think some of this had to do with, like, this is early work in the career of Jamie McKelvey, like, as far as his Leonard is concerned, and also early in the career of Kieran Gillen. Like, having read The Wicked and Divine and then going back and reading Phonogram for the first time, Wicked and Divine just seems so much better. But to be fair, like, they've had a decade of experience more to, like, make that comic.
Right. I mean, you could tell that there's talent there on both ends. And it was interesting. You know, I think we've talked about, you know, failing and failing interestingly on this show. And I think, you know, this wasn't what I would be like, this is a great successful comic, but it was interesting. And like, it wasn't like the best comic I've ever read by far, but like where it lacked in like, you know, its storytelling ability, it made up in like that it was interesting. It had interesting ideas in it, you know? So, you know, I don't like to say, even though you say fail interestingly, I wouldn't call it a failure in that sense, you know, like that, you know, it maintained my interest. So.
Gotcha. And I bought Phonogram Volume 2, so I'm definitely going to still read that.
Yeah, me too.
But whether or not, how much I like that will decide whether or not I go in for Phonogram Volume 3.
Well, I kind of feel like even if I would, you know, I would go in for 3.
Okay.
If you are enjoying The Wicked and Divine,
right?
Like that's and all his other work, I feel like now they're going back to something that they had. Now they have so much more experience, and they're writing something that was interesting, but maybe now, you know, more stronger craftsmen, that story will be better.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. Yeah, because they've both improved so dramatically over, and like McKelvey has become one of my favorite artists, but looking at the idea of art on Phonogram, it's good, but it's not like, it's nowhere near what he is today.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. You don't want somebody to peak early in their career.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. And so that, and then the other things I read this week is I had to fly a couple of times. So I was reading a lot of comics on Marvel Digital Unlimited. And I basically read how Ultimate Reed Richards became evil, which is covered in what is the Ultimate Doom trade paperback, but is the confusingly to figure out which comes first, Ultimate Enemy, Ultimate Secret, I believe, and Ultimate Doom miniseries. The problem is like there are other Ultimate Comics miniseries like Ultimate Mystery, and like it's hard to remember so many years later like which one's tied to what, and like one's a Galactus comic, but one is about, but three are about how Reed Richards became evil, you know, like, and. Right. And that was interesting, not so much because it didn't actually explain like why Reed Richards became evil, other than, you know, he was kind of like a big brain who just like his big braininess just got better of him. But it was interesting reading about the other characters in the comics, such as the Spider-Woman clone of Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe, who's now the Black Widow, and Ben Grimm, who loses his thing powers but becomes like this kind of like, I don't know, like glow in the dark, super strong character, and develops a relationship with the Invisible Woman. But that has led me into reading Hickman's run on the Ultimates, where Reed Richards is the villain of that. And that I want to read that. I want to read Hickman's Fantastic Four and his Avengers and see how this all leads into Secret Wars.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So I do feel like I'm missing something by having not read all of those.
Yeah, I feel like he's been building to Secret Wars, and those Secret Wars stands on its own. I feel like having read his Fantastic Four, I like the Doom stuff a lot more than if I hadn't. And even there's a, you know, he even brings in stuff from his S.H.I.E.L.D. miniseries.
Right. Yeah, I got to read that. I didn't read S.H.I.E.L.D. or Secret Weapons. Didn't he write that too?
Warriors?
Secret Warriors, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, Marvel Digital Unlimited is great. Which brings me to like something. So I was in South Carolina this weekend. I went into a comic book store. For the first time in a while, like I've gone into Midtown Comics in New York City to buy like a new comic book box. But this was like, I went into a new store for the first time in a while. And it was amazing just like looking around. I was like, oh, I can get this digitally. I can get this digitally. I was like, and then you know, so much of the store real estate was like tchotchkes and had me thinking to myself, do I want this? Do I actually want this? And it's like, when was the last time you were in a comic book store, Dave? Was it recent? Was it a while ago?
It was a while ago.
Yeah. And it's funny because like 4 years ago, if you'd asked me, I'd say, oh, I'd never read digital comics. Like, I love just like the tactile feel of the paper and like the smell of the paper. And I love the community of like going into a comic book store every week and talking about new releases. And like now, like I enjoy going to comic book stores. Like Nick Doyle and I were in his local comic book store for well over an hour, probably longer than he's been in that store at any one time ever, because I like love being in comic book stores. I didn't end up buying anything though, because I was just like, oh, I got my iPad and it's already loaded with comics. And like, it seems like print comics, if I buy one, they just sit in the corner unread while I'm just like going from one thing on my iPad to the next thing on my iPad.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've talked about this a little bit before as I was transitioning to digital comics and away from print comics was, you know, like, I don't know if I would be the reader I am now if it wasn't for digital comics.
Right. And I mentioned that to Nick saying that, like, if it wasn't for digital comics, Dave Tomko might not be buying comics anymore.
And not to say that I wouldn't be reading comics, but I just wouldn't be reading them in the same way. You know, gotcha. Like maybe I would be like dropping by a bookstore and buying like a trade, you know, but I wouldn't be following it like every, like month to month kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, so I think that it's easily accessible and it's not like something that, you know, I have to find a space for in my house, you know,
right.
You know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, priorities change and where you have the ability to keep reading, in a similar fashion, with digital, you know. Lets people stay fans longer in a similar way.
Right. It's funny because, like, you know, I easily have 10,000 comic books. Like, no exaggeration there. And I can't, and you know, if you even ask me like 10 years ago, like, I'm like, yeah, I just assume that I will just keep acquiring more and more comic books. And now I'm just like, Now, the mountain of space that it would take to occupy like every comic book like I own is just scary.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I think a while back, even before digital, I started being like, okay, where can I donate these books?
Yeah, and I was always like shocked that you're like, oh, I've got this like run of Ultimate Spider-Man. You're like, you want it? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll read it. And then, and I was like, you're just giving comic books away? And that's what I did. Like, I had free comic book day issues because you get like 40 comics that day if you get them all. And I had like duplicates of some. I was like, some of these I didn't even read and I don't even want to read. They're just like literally just like piles of paper in my apartment.
Right. And I had enjoyed them, but I was like, I know I'm never going to read these again.
Right.
And Billy might like these.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about digital is that like while you might read something and then never read it again, it doesn't really take up any space. Like, yeah, it'll take up space on your iPad, but you can always delete it and then re-download it if you needed to.
Yeah. So
yeah, I don't know if it's weird. That's a, like a bittersweet kind of way to end this episode.
Well, yeah, I guess it is, you know,
yeah.
But I mean, when you think about the world, I think that's just how it works. You know, I mean, when you look at like, just capitalism and consumer stuff, you know, like how you know, Blockbuster Video is not here anymore. But
right.
I mean, who wants, like, I'm glad.
When was the last time you bought a DVD? Or, like, right. even, like, I think the closest thing is that I've still bought actual books recently, though definitely the majority of my book purchases have been on my Kindle as well.
Right. But, like, I mean, Sarah and I have been, like, slamming through Scandal lately. And, like, I would, we would never do that if we were like, okay.
And by Scandal, you mean the member of the Secret Six, right?
No. I mean the ABC, I think it's ABC.
Yes.
TV show. I don't think that we would be watching it if we were like, okay, do you want to go to a Blockbuster and watch three episodes in the next 3 days and make sure that we have to watch them in the next 3 days or else we're going to be charged another like $2 or whatever.
Right.
So I think, you know, there's just, you know, there's that, you know, you, what you lose, you gain in other ways, you know?
Yeah.
You lose going to the video store and like walking around and picking out movies and like circling it twice. Like that was fun, even though it was a waste of time, you know? And now you do that on your couch and you sit and you get to watch and chat about it on your couch.
Right.
You know, have more of a personal experience with, than you might have in a personal experience in a different way than you would have in a video store.
Gotcha.
So I think, you know, yeah, it's bittersweet, but you know, I think it's just, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's true.
Embrace the change.
Oh yeah, no, I've totally embraced the change, and I implore others to do so as well. Like I was somebody who was firmly against digital comics, and even telling Jim Lee at a panel I would never buy digital comics, and then now that is pretty much all I buy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of episode number 85. The march to 100 continues. I was explaining to Nick how we were going to do variant episodes for number 100. Like, that sounds like a lot of work. I was like, yeah, especially where we have to fit. Like, we're going to have a whole series of clues on where to hide the Ali episode.
Yeah, that does sound like a lot of work.
Like, you're going to have to go into like a Reddit like sub forum, and that's going to lead you like down a rabbit hole. You'll have to enter in all your information to like a dark internet site. And then you'll get an email from like some like cryptic Russian email address.
Yeah. It's more work than anybody wants.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see.
Sorry, Ali.
Damn it.
All right, man.
All right, Dave, you have a great Tuesday night. And actually, Dave, I was going to say, and everybody else have an awesome Tuesday night, but Dave, you have an awesome Tuesday night as well.
I will. We made some crockpot, pulled chicken barbecue.
Ooh.
With some Stone beer barbecue sauce.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. And then we're going to watch some Scandal. Woo-woo!
Oh, have fun. Always my favorite member of the Secret Six. Right after Catman.
Yeah.